Good evening. Today is April 30th, and we are studying the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. This week's chapter step is We Agnostic, and our speaker tonight is Larry K. Thank you, Larry K.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for being here. And you can hear me okay? I'm coming through all right. Okay, good. Good. So I'm really delighted to be here. My name is Larry K, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in the Chicago area. Thank you so much for the invite. I appreciate it. And also this particular chapter and this particular step is near and dear to my heart because I think primarily because I came here with such great skepticism of really for me theology, and it took me a while to realize this wasn't about theology, that it was a spiritual program of action. I don't know about you guys, but when I heard the word God, some people might be very comfortable with that. For me, I was not very comfortable with that. And so I really sort of compartmentalized this whole, I kind of put the sort of the God thing, the spiritual thing, in kind of a little box over here. And give me the food plan, give me the steps. I can kind of see how that I was trying to make sense of that a little bit. I certainly, but I had a great degree of skepticism. And I'll just share with you, first off, just by way of qualification, I came to OA over 20 some years ago. It's funny, I know my abstinence date is November 3rd. After a number of years, a big surprise, I don't know, but I lose track sometimes of the years. And that's a real blessing. I don't know when that happened. We track our abstinence date, right? We hold on to that like it's gold, and I understand that. We want to know this works. We want to know other people have been abstinent. I came to OA. I was about 100 pounds heavier. I've been thinner. I've been, but God has me at this weight, about the same weight for a number of years. And I've realized that, I've come to realize that food was not the problem. It was a spiritual malady, and it didn't make a lot of sense to me. And how could it? I came here, as I say, I was heavier. A lot of us arrive. I know some people come with, as compulsive overeaters. I know some people come with bulimic tendencies. We come in all different sizes, shapes, mindsets, all that stuff. But I arrived here. I will just say that yes, I was physically uncomfortable. There's no question about that. I was a younger man. I'm 58. I didn't have any gray hair when I got here. That's changed a little bit. Didn't have any wrinkles. That's changed a little bit. But what I will tell you is when I arrived here, I and maybe you can relate to this, I was absolutely unequivocally uncomfortable in my own skin. And though for me, I looked pretty good on paper, I could hide things pretty well. I couldn't hide my body. That was true, but I could hide the pain that came with this disease, with the exhaustion of the compulsive overeating, with the exhaustion of what I later learned were, character defects that, were really manifestations of what I have come to believe is a spiritual malady. I wasn't a bad person. I certainly was a reasonably good person. I was just a sick person. I was a very sick man who, again, looked pretty good on paper, reasonably educated, always had a job. I was married at one time. I have one daughter who's she doesn't know the man that came to OA because she was a very little girl. Just to give you some perspective, I was talking to her today. She's almost 29, and she doesn't know that guy. She doesn't know the guy that her mom knew back in the day. And And so we arrive here how we arrive here, right? And you guys, you love me, some of you, many of you, you love me right where I was at. You know, you love me where I was at. And I so appreciate that compassion. And I try to extend people. Boy, they say recovery is attractive, should be attractive. I don't know about you, but, you know, when I, it's not just, you know, the physical that makes one attractive. In fact, that's probably the least of it to me today. What makes someone attractive and what makes recovery attractive in this way of life, as we kind of lead into this, the second step here, is, you know, are they compassionate? Is there a compassion? Are they abstinent peacefully most of the time? Not all of the time, but are they abstinent happily? You know, that's the type of recovery that's really attractive to me today. Right now, don't get me wrong. I'm human. You know, perhaps you guys have heard, you know, that, you know, we don't rise above the level of a human being. That's true. So we all have the capacity to be, to get resentful, to be fearful, to, you know, life deals us different, you know, different circumstances that we have to navigate through and all that. But really, the people that I respect their recovery, they've had a spiritual transformation as the result of the implementation of the steps. And they've been brought into alignment, into a relationship with power. That's all. What this power is, I got to tell you, it's a great mystery to me. If you know who your higher power is and you know, you have, it's tied to theology for you, wonderful, beautiful. We in Overeaters Anonymous, we are not opposed to religion. We're just not for it. We're not opposed, we're not against it, we're not for it. We take no position on those things. But rest assured, what I do know today is this is a spiritual program of action. And, you know, when I began to learn, I am a big book person, absolutely I am, because that's the thing, the implementation of the steps is the program of action. And experientially, that's the only thing that allowed me, that brought me to some sense of sanity and brought me into a relationship with this.
Oops, Larry, you kind of froze a bit.
Hello.
I don't think what I say is bad. I just, you know, I don't think you like
that. Hey, Larry, we can't hear you right now. I don't know if you want to try and restart. Are you there?
Ah, can you hear me, Rachel?
Good. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, here's what I did. So I'll tell you exactly what happened. What happened was, as you can imagine, I was on my laptop, and my laptop just restarted. I don't know what happened, but so I now here. This is a step two thing. I will tell you. So now I'm on my cell phone, and I got to tell you, completely honest. I don't. That would have shaken me like nobody's business. Doesn't shake me today. Honestly, like it doesn't shake me. I don't know if it shook you, doesn't shake me. Okay. It just doesn't, it's just a non-issue to me. And I thought, okay, let's see what God has in store for me. So now I'm holding my cell phone, but as long as you can hear me and see me. So where I left off is that I know that I needed to have, first off, step one, I had to admit who I was. Okay. I have an allergy of the body. And I have the twist of the mind, the mental obsession. And so with regard to that, what I'll tell you is that's how I qualify. The doctor's opinion in the big book, I'd mentioned the big book, that it's not because of the traumas. I've had many traumas in my life. Trust me when I tell you, I've had mine, you've had yours. I'm not minimizing them. You know, I've received outside help for my traumas as a child. I've mentioned to other people, I you know, just so you can know that I had a pretty rough childhood. There was some, you know, sexual molestation. There's those types of things. But I only mention that not to sensationalize it. I want to mention it because none of those things made me into a compulsive overeater. Okay. And sometimes that can rattle folks a little bit. And Rachel, you can still hear me okay, right? Okay, good, good.
Yeah, you're great.
Okay, good. I just want to make sure. So none of those things made me into a compulsive overeater. What makes me a compulsive overeater is I have the allergy of the body that when I ingest my alcoholic food substances, it triggers a phenomenon of craving. That is an abnormal physical manifestation. I am biologically mandated to eat more of the same. In a normal person, that whatever they eat, you know, they at some reasonable point in time, they become satisfied and then they become disinterested in the food. For me, my desire for more does not become satisfied. It becomes magnified. It becomes amplified. That's a physical manifestation. And then I have the second component, which is the twist of the mind or the mental obsession. They say the main problem that we have, it centers in the mind rather than the body. If it's centered in the body, you know, a diet would work and I would go on a diet, lose the weight, get to a normal weight. I'm good to go. I can navigate through life comfortably. If it was just in the body, I could, you know, January 1st, go get the gym membership, work out, you know, eat reasonably and I'm good to go. Not so with me. So that's how I qualify in. And what the steps do, the implementation of the steps, the first three steps are the preparation steps. The first two in particular, and we're talking about step two, is I've learned and I've come to believe that these are conclusions of the mind. Do I qualify? Am I a compulsive overeater? Do I have the allergy and the mental twist? Yes, I do. I can raise my hand to that. Okay, it's a self-diagnosis, right? Now, if that be the case, what the book tells us is that I must have a spiritual experience, which is a quick sort of white light experience, which most of us do not have. I didn't have that. Or a spiritual awakening, which is more of the educational variety over time. I had that. And if you have that, it's not like I can just rest on my laurels. And how do you get that? What, after thousands of years, hundreds of years, with no solution, they found a solution. They found one. And it was through the implementation of these steps. It was, you know, they started off with the six steps, if you will, of the Oxford Group movement, which were later codified into our expanded into our 12 steps. But the second step, I don't need to have anything figured out. You know, I don't need to have this notion of a higher power figured out. In fact, if you look at Bill Wilson and Bill's story, I'm going to read to you, just make good use of our time. This guy was skeptical. I mean, you talk about skeptical about a higher power. And near the end of that bleak November, you know, day in 1934, his phone rings. And this guy is a hopeless drunk. Bill is a hopeless drunk. He is dying of an untreated condition. And what happens is his phone rings and it's his buddy, Ebby Thatcher. Why did Ebby call him? I'll tell you why, to save his own butt. Ebby called him because he needed to share. They told him in the Oxford group that if you're going to stay sober, yes, you need to have a relationship with a power, a higher power. But if you want to stay sober, you're going to have to carry this message to someone else. You're going to have to service and self-sacrifice for others with no expectation of a return. And so that's what Ebby did. That's why Ebby was calling on Bill. And he called on him. And I'll tell you what, thank goodness, when Bill was really skeptical, he says, okay, this guy got religion. Okay, big deal. You know, I'm not so impressed. And then Ebby Thatcher saw the skepticism and he said something on page 12 that is still with us today. And thank goodness it is, because your group is kind of named in this way. He said, my friend Ebby suggested what then seemed kind of a novel idea. He said, Bill, why don't you choose your own conception of God. Why don't you choose your own conception of a higher power? See, I needed to hear that, because in step two, where we come to believe in a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity, the main question in step two is it possible? Is it conceivable that there's a power outside of yourself? Call it a creative force. Call it a universal intelligence, creative mind. Call it whatever you want. It just can't be you. It has to be a power greater than you. And if you're open to that, and I remember someone telling me, because I wasn't very open to that, but I remember a sponsor at the time saying, Larry, you've already owned up and admitted to the fact that you are powerless over your food and your life indeed has become unmanageable. We've already talked about the doctor's opinion. You believe that you are biologically mandated to eat over and over again due to the physical abnormality, the physical allergy. And so you cannot, once you start, you can't stop. And once you stop, you can't stop from starting again due to the mental obsession. So you've qualified yourself, right? Okay, so now what we're telling you is you must have a spiritual awakening or a spiritual experience in order to overcome this disease. And there's great evidence of people throughout AA that have been able, these hopeless drunks, that they've been able to remain sober happily, peacefully. So what we're saying with step two is, do you think there's a possibility that there's a power greater than yourself that could restore you to sanity? And I said, highly unlikely. I am a very, very important educated man, right? I think it's very unlikely. And he says, so you're telling me there's a little possibility. Okay, I'll give you that. Maybe a possibility. Again, highly improbable. He said, Larry, you're done with step two. If anybody on this line can raise their hand and say, I qualify in with this, I know who I am in step one, I cannot stay stopped. I cannot stay stopped from picking up the food. Diet, you can push yourself away from the table on occasion, but I can't stay stopped. Okay, so you have the allergy, you have the mental obsession. Now, if you can raise your hand and say, maybe there's a power greater than Larry, what that power is, it could be mysterious, we don't have to know, then you can move on from step two. How many people believe that the pace at which you work through the steps is determined by your sponsor? You don't have to raise your hand. But if you have any conception, oh, we're down to 3 minutes? Okay. Yep. Okay, so in the final 3 minutes, I can't sneeze in 20 minutes. But anyway, if we're done, and if you think that your sponsor makes the determination based, as to the pace at which you work through the steps, that's not a little wrong. That's dead wrong. Your sponsor is not determines when do we move on from step one to step two? When you finish step one. When we finish step two, we move on to step three. And I would suggest that we do it rather quickly. So for me, we make an affirmative declaration in step three to move on with the work. And where the transformation happens, where we access power, we cultivate this relationship to power, is in the implementation of the steps 4 through 9. And no one really ever explained that to me before. I thought, my disease is so complex that there's no way that this is possible until, you know what? It happened. It happened to me. So I'm going to wrap up by saying this, because the time goes pretty short. We don't have to figure out who the higher power is. Came to believe through the implementation of the steps. If I'm going to need, change to my heart, change to my mind, it's going to come through the implementation of the steps. I'm going to have to do a moral inventory. I'm going to have to do kind of like a confession in step 5. I'm going to have the humility through 6 and 7. okay, to allow to be ready for God to remove the defects of character. I'm going to have to make restitution for harms done in steps 8 and 9, right? And by that time, I'm going to have this transformation. Your sponsor isn't going to tell you that you're recovered at that point in a recovered state of being. You'll know it. The obsession will be lifted. And then we have steps 10, 11, and 12 to maintenance and grow that relationship, to continue to take our inventory, you know, to improve our conscious contact with God through prayer and meditation. And then I've got to practice these principles by carrying this message to someone else. So I'll just wrap up by saying that for me, very skeptical. Most people are. Lots of people come in very skeptical, or they come in on the other end. No, I got the God thing all figured out. I'm good. You know, and they overlook this chapter. And I think this chapter is critical. We agnostic, we without knowledge, agnostic without knowledge. So anyways, that's a wrap. I appreciate, sorry, I got, oh, there's my timer on there. Sorry, I got cut off there, but I hope it was helpful to somebody. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Wow, thanks so much, Larry. That was so beautiful. It's always a pleasure to hear you speak. We will now open the meeting for questions and for 3-minute shares. As this is a big book study, sharing and questions should relate specifically to the chapter and step being studied this week. We ask that you accept this guideline in order to keep the meeting on track. If you'd like to share or ask a question, please raise your virtual hand, which is under reactions, or *9 if you're on the phone. I will call the raised hands in order, and the Zoom host will ask you to unmute when it's your turn. Okay, Catherine A., could you please share with us?
Thanks. I'm just starting my timer. Thanks, Larry, so much for speaking tonight. I really appreciated how you talked, especially about how step 2 doesn't need to be this big thing where we figure out our whole higher power and what that is. Like, it's really just like, do you have that tiny shred of that possibility that there could be a higher power that could restore me to sanity? And that really is such a powerful thing. I remember in step 2, you know, my sponsor saying, like, just don't think too much about it. Don't worry too much about it. That's what step 11's for. Just you'll get there. Step 2, you just need to think that there's a possibility. And that was important to me coming in as an agnostic, you know, former very firm atheist. And so I appreciate you really highlighting that tonight. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about just how that evolved from there for you, from that like tiny shred to actually developing a deeper relationship with a higher power.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for the question. I muted myself, so I couldn't unmute myself. So the way it evolved for me is, what was undeniable for me was that something happened to me, right? And so it was more, the evidence was, it first started out with the fact that I was able to maintain sobriety, abstinence, which I never was able to do before. And it was different. There was a heart change. Okay. And with that, maybe at first, as I completed the steps, it was the first time that I had worked the steps, someone who advocated that I do it quickly, which was so counterintuitive to me, right? Because I thought my problem was so complex, so problematic, that how could this possibly be a lasting, sustainable change by working these steps quickly? And I was so wrong. It was in the category of something that I did not know that I did not know, which is all about program. The things that I didn't know that I didn't know. And so in answer to your question, my faith grew from there. It's still a great mystery to me. I mean, I don't know with this. I do use the word God. I do have a personal relationship with the higher power that's that's cultivated over time. It's kind of like a friend. And that may seem, that would, if someone would have told me that when I first came into the program, that would have seemed very awkward to me and very weird. But I will just tell you that I have this personal relationship with the higher power. And what I always tell people is this, is that I implemented the steps. I did it imperfectly. Now, my abstinence, I had to have entire abstinence, but the implementation of the steps I did quickly, but imperfectly, right? And nonetheless, I think God, I'll say God's grace, unearned in a sense, something happened to me to where my heart began to change. So, you know, for example, you know, at that point, I was sober peacefully, as I mentioned, I was sober happily. And there was something, I was imbued with a sense of wanting to carry this message to others. I'm not a very sociable person. I'm not at all. I'm more of a loner. Okay. That's just kind of who I am. Now I can be sociable, but that's not my, you know, I'm not like the life of the party at all. That's not my MO. But I mentioned that because part of my faith that evolved and grew in this higher power is I was able to do things that absolutely baffled me in the past. So I was able to maintain friendships. I was able to go in depth and be more transparent. Intimacy, into me, you see. That became more natural, you know? And so if it wasn't a power greater than me, here's the delusion I've been under for over some 20 years. I treat people better. They treat me better. I'm able to do things that I wasn't able to do in the past. And this abstinence has been sustainable and this relationship with a higher power has been sustainable. So that's the delusion that I'm under. I'll take it any day of the week, right? So anyways, thanks for the question. Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Lisa. Lisa, you're up.
Hi, Lisa, compulsive overeater. 100 pounder multiple times because I kept leaving the rooms. Now I abstain from leaving. Don't leave. Larry, thank you. I'm really glad you're here because I asked this question, you know, you ask, you know, six compulsive overeaters a question, you're going to get, you know, eight answers. And so I asked this question and you and I have the same lineage of sponsor. There you go. I can't even do my camera. And so I just want to ask you in case I'm not here on third step night, if your sponsee is struggling at step three, don't you just keep going? Because that's what step three is all about, a decision to keep working the steps. I'm just going to ask you that.
Yeah, okay. So, no, it's a good question.
Yeah.
Again, presuming, I'm making the presumption that they're not still, you know, stinking drunk, right?
No.
Right? I'm using alcohol, right? We'll presume that they're not still into the food, right? Into their alcoholic foods. We have a dignity of choice. I get that. But presuming that, okay, so if that's the case, and they're on step three is merely, to me, I tell them it's an affirmative declaration. In other words, something we say out loud, and the words are less important than the direction we're going. It's an invitation to move on with the work. The real work, as you know, is going to begin in 4 through 9. That's where the transformation happens in 4 through 9. Yes, we have to have a firm foundation of understanding what the problem is, step one, what the solution to the problem is, accessing power, step two. And then let's make this affirmative declaration. It could take 10 seconds. Do I know when I'm in step three who God is, who I'm turning my will and my life over? You know, there's all these, do I need to do it from a mountaintop? Do I need to do it? I mean, you can do that if you want to, that's great. But is there gonna be any magic in that? No, I'll be into the Snicker bars and the Kit Kat bars in 2 minutes. I don't care where I take that third step. There's no magic to it. It really is an invitation to launch yourself out into the fourth step. And in the midst of the fear of what you're going to uncover, we lose people in 4, we lose them in 9. They get back into the food. It makes sense. But if you're in enough pain, pain is the great persuader. You will, in the midst of your uncomfortability, you'll work steps 4 through 9 imperfectly, but you'll do it. And you'll do it quickly. And then you'll tell me about your transformation. It's going to be customized just for you. That's been my experience. So yeah, I hope that helps.
And so what I'm hearing, two things. One I'm hearing is, as a result of the steps, we have a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening. I'm hearing that. And then I heard you say, you know, in my mind, I heard you say step one's the only one I have to do perfectly. Two right. through 12, I can never do perfectly because those are the spiritual steps. And I don't claim spiritual perfection. All right. Same sponsee's train of thinking. I'm really glad you're here tonight. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you. Glad you're here too as well.
Thanks so much, Lisa. And now I'm going, Mandy, I think I'm next. I hope so. Okay. Real quick. Rachel, compulsive overeater, recovered compulsive overeater. Larry, I'm so happy you're here. Thank you for coming. I love hearing you speak so much. So much resonates with me, especially the trauma stuff. It's really hard to express, especially in, I was in a trauma group and people did not understand that I needed to be well and not live in that place anymore. And it was really, really difficult to leave. Anyway, I really appreciate that sentiment, but I wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, into me, you see, oh my God, that is so clever. I love that so, so much. That is so beautiful. I loved what you said. I'm newly recovered. I have like 116 days. And I'm really stuck a bit. So, when you said about your sponsor doesn't, you know, choose the pacing, that really spoke to me because, oops, sorry. I don't know what that is. My sponsor and I went really fast. My hair was absolutely on fire and I was on fire and he did not set the pacing and God definitely did. And now that I'm recovered, I sort of feel like I'm not on fire, but I'm just kind of sitting peacefully, but like a bit strange experience, you know, and he said that's normal and I'm doing okay. I need to get into more service. I had a sponsee and I lost her. She was not ready. And I just feel a bit disconnected. So I was just curious if you have any words of wisdom, which I'm sure you do, about when you said about steps 10 through 12 are maintenance and growth. Like, I'm feeling really stuck. I'm overwhelmed. I have a job. It's overwhelming. And I feel like a bit dissociated a bit. And I'm just like, I feel connected to God and I'm not picking up, but I'm like a bit stuck. So I bet you're going to say call newcomer because that's what my sponsor says, but please answer. Thank you so much, Larry, for being here.
Yeah. Well, I'll let Bill answer this. When he often, and I feel the same way. He often, you know, when he wrote the book and I believe it was divinely inspired. I mean, that's just my belief. I couldn't prove it to anyone, but he often he felt flat. He got depressed. I have a chronic condition. I'm not walking on water. I'm human. He was too. But when he was really, the one thing that really saved him is he would go back to Towns Hospital and he would find someone to help. I believe he wasn't in the results business. He was trying to extend the hand of AA to someone. I try to extend the hand. I'm trying to do it now. I'll talk to people individually, but that's what we do here. So when I'm feeling flat, I'm feeling spiritually flat. It's not if I'm going to feel spiritually flat, Rachel, I'm going to feel spiritually flat sometimes. I'm going to feel disconnected. I intuitively now will reach out to people even when I don't feel like it sometimes. Because again, a lot of it is counterintuitive. It's the last thing. I want to stay absorbed in Larry. When Larry's not feeling good, I want to deal with my favorite topic, Larry. You know, enough Larry. Get out of Larry a bit and get into someone else. And when I do that, like I'll get off this call and I won't be so absorbed in me. So when you feel, and you'll develop a habit of that, when you feel off, just like Bill, you'll go and seek someone out. Whether they accept it, whether they want to hear from you, who you talk to, it doesn't really matter, Rachel. You're extending your hand to someone and watch what happens. Watch if that doesn't begin to change. That's the most spiritual thing I could do is carry the message to a still suffering person in this program. So I hope that helps a little bit.
Thank you so, so much, Larry. That helps so much. Okay, who do we have next? You know what, Mandy, I'm so sorry. It is now past 8:47. Please, would the Zoom host please stop the recording so we have 10 minutes to share unrecorded.